parsha's told us is a very, very difficult parsha to learn. And a lot of people have gone off the deep end. We're talking about a family that it seems is in crisis. And it's not just Stama family. We're talking about the family of Yitzchak and Rivka and Yaakov and Esav, the four main personalities that appear in the Seder. And there's a lot that's been said about it. Incidentally, there's a lot of nonsense that has been said, and we're going to try and dispel some of that nonsense. But at the very core of the study of the parasha is the fact that we have two moral dilemmas. The two moral dilemmas of the parasha are Rivka and Yaakov. Rivka orchestrates, maneuvers a deceit of her husband. Yitzchak wants to bless Esav, and she insists, and we'll see the extent to which she insists. There's nothing that will stop her. She's going to get Yaakov in there to act as though he's Esav and to walk off with the blessings. Serious moral dilemma. How does she do something like this to her husband? Of course, the biggest question of all, as far as Rivka is concerned, why doesn't she simply sit down and have a heart-to-heart talk with her husband? Yitzchak, you don't know what Esav is? He's going to be the father of a great people. Unfortunately, Nebuch, he's evil. It hurts me to say it, Yitzchak, it hurts me terribly. It's cracking me up completely. I'm a broken woman, half a broken woman, because we also have Yaakov, who's a great tzaddik. Why doesn't she talk to him? Why does she have to pull this terrible, terrible seeming deceit? Yaakov, it would seem, if we don't read the Torah correctly, it would seem as though Yaakov is simply walking off with the birthright by taking terribly unfair advantage of his own twin brother's terrible hunger. People read it, and here it is. Esav comes in from the field. He's exhausted. Yaakov is cooking lentils, red lentils. I'm hungry. Give me to eat from that stuff. And we're left with the impression as though Yaakov is saying, yeah, wait a minute. No, Esav, not that simple. You want the lentils? Sell me your birthright. No. I don't need a birthright. Give me the food. I'm dying of hunger. No. Yaakov, it seems, is telling him, no. We have to do this contract in quadruplicate. And we have to, do you have your chotemet with you? You have to sign. And of course, after all, everything is going to be written up, we're going to have to find, where is it, my stapler. So we staple it all together. And he's dying of hunger. Immoral, Yaakov Avinu. Incidentally, what I just described never happened. But it did happen in the minds of people who don't know how to learn a Pasuk Chumash. For that matter, who don't know how to learn two words in a Pasuk Chumash. And I've come up against them in the flesh. So, and then, of course, the second moral dilemma with Yaakov is that he does go through the whole charade of coming into his father, saying, are you Esav? Yes, sure, okay. What's going on over here? This is one of the mothers of the Jewish people. Rivka, this is Rivka. Yaakov, who's called Yisrael, the whole name of the country. Yisrael, what are you talking about? It's deceit, lying. It's bad news. Don't worry. End of the shiur. It's all good news. But you have to know how to learn a Pasuk Chumash. And if you don't know how to learn a Pasuk Chumash, you're in serious trouble. But you're fortunate. You come to the Israel Center for a shiur, you're going to know how to learn a Pasuk Chumash. And the shiur cannot end until you are all convinced that there was absolutely no, what's the word that they used? Moral turpitude. What's that word? I don't know. What are they accusing Netanyahu always of, you know, or Derry, you know? No, I shouldn't say them in the same breath. Okay. All right. There is no moral dilemma. Everybody is acting the way they should act. Rivka and Yaakov are doing the right thing throughout. That's the point of the whole shiur. Now we can start. And I'm going to move. You have to follow along with me. Nobody is going to, like last week we learned of Rabbi Akiva's students who are drowsing and dozing off in the middle of shiur, and Rabbi Akiva shook them up. Nobody's going to doze or drowse here today. Okay. Number one. Ela told us Yitzhak ben Avraham, Avraham holy, these are the generations of Yitzhak, the son of Avraham. Avraham gave birth to Yitzhak. Yitzhak was 40 years old when he took Rivka, the daughter of Bisuel, Arami from Padan Aram, the sister of Lavan Arami, unto him as a wife. Very important. I don't have it here, but the Rashi over here says, you know, all this information we knew about Rivka, that she's the daughter of Bisuel, and she's from Padan Aram, and she's the sister of Lavan Arami. We knew it all. Why is it repeated here? So Rashi says to tell us that Rivka grew up in a society that was immoral. She had a father and a brother who were immoral people. They were idolaters. And this gem of all gems, Rivka, at least one thing we have to understand, and I'm going to make this point a number of times, Rivka is strong. She has fortitude. She has determination. She's tough. Okay. Anyway, it seems that they didn't have, she was barren. Yitzchak prayed to God facing his wife because she is barren, and God listened to him, and Rivka became pregnant. And then the two, it seems the twins, and the two twins seem to be causing a great deal of pain to her. Vatomer, and she said, Imkein lomazah anochi, what do I need this pregnancy for? Vatelech, where it's underlined, Vatelech lidroshat Hashem, and she went to seek God's guidance. Rashi says that she went to the Beit Medrash of Shem Ve'eva, Vayomer Hashem lo, and God said to her, these three words are important, and maybe more than three words are important, the word law. God said to her, you should know you don't simply have two children in your womb, you're carrying two mighty nations, and there will be a struggle between those nations throughout history. When one is strong, the other one will be weaker. One will overwhelm the other, and this is going to be a story that will continue throughout all of history. It's the battle of Rome and Jerusalem. Rome and Jerusalem. And of course, Rome destroyed Jerusalem. Rome was itself destroyed. Jerusalem is ascendant. All that's left of ancient Rome are a few old, decrepit buildings. Ancient, mighty Rome is a story for museums. There is no Rome anymore, but there certainly is in Israel. This is the ongoing struggle. Anyway, she went full-term pregnancy, v'nei, behold, tomim bibitna. That's underlined over there, tomim bibitna. I'm skipping around. The first one comes out and he's red. They called him Esav. Then his brother came out and his hand is holding on to the heel of Esav. They called him Yaakov. Yitzchak was 60 years old when they were born. The boys grew up. Pasuk chavav. Vayigdul hanorim. The boys grew up by Esav Isho Deat Sayed. Esav was a hunter, a man of the field, and Yaakov was Ishtam. And Yaakov was a man who was full in his morality, in his ethics, in his closest to God. Yoshev Oholim, who lived in the tents of Shem V'Ever, he studied Torah. Vayev Yitzchak as Esav, very important. Yitzchak loved Esav, kitzayid b'fiv, because he eats from that which Esav hunts. V'rifka ohevet et Yaakov, and Rivka loves Yaakov. This is all very important. It's all very, very important. And maybe we can dispel some other, I believe, a terrible misunderstanding, as though, you know, Yitzhak is naive. Yitzhak is such a trusting soul. And you know, this fellow Esav can fool him all the way. Feh! Yitzhak is not naive. Yitzhak knows exactly what this Esav is all about. Hopefully we'll explain it. I have a lot of stuff. I have a lot of explaining to do before the end of this year. At least it's nice, you know. Each one of the two children has a parent that loves them. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. It helps. It helps children maintain a sense of balance. Okay. Vayozid Yaakov Nozid. One day Yaakov is cooking a bowl of lentils, a pot of lentils. Esav came in from the field. He's exhausted. Vayomer Esav el Yaakov. Esav said to Yaakov, Halitenina, fill me up with that red stuff because I'm exhausted. Al kein kora shemo Edom. That's why they called him red. Vayomer Yaakov. Here it begins. Here's moral dilemma number one begins. Vayomer Yaakov. Yaakov said, Michro chayomet pechorat chali. I want you to sell your birthright to me. Vayomer Esav. Esav said to him, Hinei anochi holach lamus, I'm going to die. Lo hazeh li bechorah. Who wants birthright? I need the red lentils. That's what I need. Vayomer Yaakov. Yaakov, seemingly, if you don't understand what's going on over here, seemingly cold-blooded, unmoved, uncaring about the fact that a fellow human being and yet his twin brother is feels he's dying of hunger. So no, this is a deal, you understand? I want you to swear to me that you're selling me the birthright. He shoveli kayom, vayishavalo, and he swore to him, vayimkeret b'chorosto liyakov, and he sold his birthright to Yaakov. serious, serious moral dilemma. How does a brother do this to another brother? So Torah, of course, is going to tell us. Watch. Last pasuk, the Yaakov Natan LeEsav, and Yaakov, all right, we'll see right away. Yaakov gave Esav bread. He didn't ask for bread. Unezid adashim, and the lentil stew. Vayochal, Esav ate, and he drank, got up, he went, and he spurned, he shamed the birthright. Only one thing you have to know over here, and I'm telling you, I've met up with people that don't have a clue. They don't have a clue. The beginning of that pasuk, we've talked about this in the past, but now it's going to become part of a total picture. All you have to do is know how to read two words. Two words, that's all you have to know how to read. And the entire parsha, the whole story, changes dramatically. V'Yaakov Natan LeEsav. And Yaakov, the translation down there is Jacob gave Esau. Gold has written on the side that that translation is incorrect. There are two ways you can say Yaakov gave in Hebrew. Vayitain Yaakov or V'Yaakov Natan. What's the difference between Vayitain Yaakov and Yaakov gave and V'Yaakov Natan, Yaakov, I can't even translate it yet. What's the difference between the two? All the difference in the world. Yaakov Natan is past perfect, which can only be translated as Yaakov had given. Forget the idea that Yaakov is, take a whiff of this. You see, no, you're not going to get it until you sell me your birthright. Sign your name. That never happened. It never happened. The moment he came into the house, he says, I'm hungry, give him. Yaakov immediately gave him, immediately. All negotiations are taking place during and after his having eaten. That's the fact. That's how it happened. And it's only in the way two words are written. Yaakov Natan means, and Yaakov had given. Had given. You think he waited until after he had agreed to sell him the birthright? Not so. And that's why the end of the pasuk is able to say that Esav had shamed the birthright. Because he did not sell it to him while he's hungry. He sold it to him on a full stomach. That's what really happened. Are you all with me? Shake your heads and give me a... All right. Incidentally, there are other examples in Chumash and Tanakh of past perfect. The first one in Torah, the classical one, is in Parshat Bereshit, after the story of the serpent and eating from the Eitz Hadat, and all the rest, the next parsha begins, for ha'odam yoda et chava ishto, and man knew, that means man had relations with his wife. It doesn't say vayeda odam, it says v'ha'odam yoda, and Rashi on the spot says, kfar kodam lachein, before the previous story, Adam had known his wife. Not something that happened now. Yaakov Natan, he had given him to eat. Immediately, immediately. Yaakov will not leave his brother hungry for a second. Immediately he gave him to eat. And not only gave him to eat, he gave him bread and he gave him nezidat Hashem. I'm sure he gave him a drink and he gave him a napkin and he gave him everything that he needed. So that's number one. Moral dilemma of Yaakov and Esav simply has come to an end. In fact, if you have Rav Shamshon for Hirsham Chumash, in one sentence he takes care of it on this pasuk for Yaakov Natan. He had already given to him immediately before, and he's not the only one. Others say it. I had in my days, a few years ago, quite a debate with a colleague over here in the. He says, "But it says it at the end of the parsha, you know. The parsha is saying that after it was all over, that's when he gave him to eat." And I kept telling him, no, that's not the way you read it. It doesn't say Vayitain Yaakov, it says Yaakov Natan. He had given, that's all. By the way, if you remember this, then you will understand many, many other psukim in Chumash and Tanakh. Yes?
Why does the English translation look like he said?
You know what? So that the English translation gave me the opportunity to write my own translation on the right-hand side of the page. I have absolutely no idea why they translated it that way. It's an incorrect translation. That's why I'm here. All right. Okay. Let's turn over. You know what? This is the story of the brachas. We're going to come back to them. Go to the next page, number four. Now, I have to give a little introduction to number four. Number four is a very, I think, a well-known piece by the Netziv. The Netziv wrote the Chumash HaMikdavar. He was the great Rosh Yeshiva of the Volozhiny Yeshiva, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. And you'll hear what he has to say. Now, I say in all humility and in all, I was going to say I don't agree with him. That doesn't sound too good. Let's put it this way. I have a completely different way to look at it than he does. And you'll judge. Just be careful in whose favor you decide. All right. The Netziv. And I think the Netziv is oft quoted. And he was a giant. But here's one piece that I find difficulty with. And I'll tell you why, and I'll tell you my own shot. He discusses and describes the relationship that existed between Rivka and Yitzchak. He's troubled by the fact that Rivka didn't sit down and talk to Yitzchak. Why don't they sit down and over a cup of coffee, they're going to talk about it, and she's going to tell him exactly what the problems with Esav are. And not only that, wait a minute. Today's the yard site? Those two people in the back, their name is Kupinski. Their son, Aryeh Kupinski, was one of the five who was killed in the shul in Har Nof. Their son, Hashem Yinkom Damo, lived on the top floor in our house. That was a morning that many, many, many people will never, ever forget. Hamakom Yenachem Etchem. The Netziv takes us back to the very first time that Rivka sees Yitzchak. Eliezer is bringing her back, bringing her from Padan Aram to be the Kala of Yitzchak. And there's a man walking out in the field. And she asks Eliezer, who is that man in the field? And Eliezer says, that's my master, that's Yitzchak. And it says she sort of slid off the camel, she covered her face. The Netziv is going to describe that the saintliness of Yitzchak had a profound impact on her. And this impact is of such a nature that it affected her for a lifetime. That there was a certain awe, reverence, maybe even fear and trembling that she had before the saintliness of Yitzchak. And he's going to explain. Therefore, she was not able to sit and talk with him. Yitzchak, let's talk this out. Now, her relationship with Yitzchak is of a completely different sort. Watch. Let's say it in his words. V'kach omer ha-netziv. You see where it's underlined over there? V'atipol me'al ha-gamal. She fell off the camel. Me'rov pachad ve'ema. From fright and fear. Omnam lo yoda mimi he mit pachedet. She didn't know who it is that she's afraid of. But there was something about the saintliness of Yitzchak that sent fear and trembling through her. Ubetocha pachad shalat evet. Before she knows yet, she has this fear, she sees this man, she's frightened, and she asks the servant, Mihu ish halozeh asher ani mitpa'elet umitpachedet mimenu? Who is this man from whom I'm overwhelmed and from whom I'm frightened? Kisheshama, when she heard Shehu Isha, the one who's going to be her husband, Vatikachotzaif, Vatiskas, she covered her face with a veil. Meirov pachad ubusha, from her great fear and her shame before him. Kemo shemevina she'ena ruya liot lo laisha, as though she feels that she's unworthy to be a wife to this saintly, holy, angelic man. Umeoz v'hola. From then and further, nigba b'liba pachad. There was established in her heart a fear of her husband. Her relationship with Yitzchak was not the relationship of Sarah and Avram or Rachel and Yaakov. If Rachel wanted to say something to Yaakov, she said it to him. Havali banim, give me children. V'im ayin meso anochi. If not, I'm going to die. Sarah was able to say to Avram, Garesh et ha'oma hazot v'et b'no, cast out this maidservant and her son. She was tough. She was strong. Rachel was tough. But the Netziv says, Rivka could never do that. She was not with Yitzchak like Sarah was with Avram and Rachel with Yaakov. Asher b'yot lehem eizah k'peid aleihem, if they had something to say to them, lo boshu l'daber, retet l'fneihem, they were not afraid from speaking in strong terms before them. Mashen kein Rivka. Rivka was different. V'chol zeh, now remember he's writing this at the end of Parshat Chaye Sarah. And he says this little incident of her seeing Yitzchak falling off the camel, covering herself, this is the introduction to Parshas Toldos, this coming week's Seder, the one we're talking about, that will explain why she never discussed Esav with Yitzchak. The whole Zahagdom al-Sipush Yavo, the Parshas Toldos, all of this is the introduction to the story that's going to come in Parshas Toldos. Yitzchak and Rivka had different opinions. he loves Esav, she loves Yaakov. Umikom makom lo motzo Rivka leiv lahamid et Yitzchak al dato. She never had the courage or the ability to tell Yitzchak exactly how she feels. But dvarim nechochim, with proper words, explain it to him. Ki hi yodat ha'emet. She couldn't tell him that she knows the truth, that Esav is only a hunter. And then also, at the time of the brachos, v'ilu haita, if Rivka would have been with her husband, like Sarah and Rachel with their husbands, lo haya magia inyan habrachos b'zeh ha'ofen. If she would have had a normal relationship with her husband, as Sarah did with Avram and Rachel with Yaakov. You understand, a normal relationship is when you can stand up to your husband and just tell him exactly what you think. But all right, that's weird. I say in all humility, I can't agree with the Nitziv. I said already, for her to grow up the way she did, where she did, in the society, in the family, in the milieu, that was the total antithesis of what she was. She had to be strong as nails. You don't walk out a Rivka from Padan Aram in the house of Lavan and Besuel because you're a scaredy cat. You're able to emerge as a Rivka from that house because you're strong, you're determined, you are perfectly certain of your way in life. Oh, does that take courage? Does that take courage? Does that take strength? We are so affected by the society around us. And here, she's living with it in the house. No, no. Rivka is very strong. Rivka is very strong. I'll show you how strong she is. Let's go back to the page before. I'm going to run quickly. Oh, gosh. I'm going to run quickly through the parash of the brachos. Vayhi kizok and Yitzchak. Yitzchak grew old. His eyes couldn't see well. He called his son Esav and he told him, I don't know how long I'm going to live. I want to bless you before I die. Go out into the field and bring me the kind of food that I like and I will bless you. Now, where it's underlined, Rivka has been listening in. She heard this conversation. V'Rivka Amra Yaakov b'na, and Rivka, by the way, you know what we have over here? A past perfect, you understand? This is another V'Yaakov Natan, but I don't have the time to explain it. It's a very fascinating one. No, you know what? I'll explain it. Sometimes past perfect is used, even though what's happening here is really happening after what came before. She had heard Yitzchak speaking to Esav. And it's only after she heard Yitzchak speak to Esav that she can talk to Yaakov and say, you're going to go get those brachas. The reason why it says V'rivka Omra, sometimes past perfect is used, if you want to show that what happens now happened instantly, as though it was ready to happen even before. In other words, while she's listening in, while she's eavesdropping on the conversation, she already is planning it all. And the moment that Esav goes out into the field, she says to Yaakov, her son, I heard your father speaking to Esav, your brother, bring me from your hunting, and I'm going to bless you. Now, you'll see I have underlined, this is Rivka talking to Yaakov. Va'ato b'ni shma b'koli l'asher ani mitzaveh otach. This is not a mother saying, dear Beitzikl, will you please do me a favor? No. She said to him, shma b'koli. Shma b'koli means listen clearly and carefully to everything I say. That's the same terminology that God told Avram, Kol Asher Tomar Elecho Sora, whatever Sora tells you, Shma Bekola, listen precisely to what she says. Apa Bini, now my son, Shma Bekoli. I'm not begging you, I'm not asking you, I'm not importuning you, I am commanding you. This is a tough woman talking right now. This is not a frightened woman. Lechna latzon, please go to the sheep. V'kachli, kachli, take unto me, misham, two goats. And then, v'yomi Yaakov, el Rivka imo, Yaakov says to his mother, but my brother is hairy and I am not hairy. So she says, further words on him, Vatomalo imo olai kililotcha bini. If anyone is going to get hurt by this, I take all the hurt upon myself. Achshma bekoli, again, listen to me. Velech, go. Kachlecha, take unto you. Vayelech, vayikach, vayoveh lima. He's a big boy, you know, he's a big boy, but he's listening. He is listening to his mother. He went and he took and he brought to his mother, and his mother made venison, kasherahev, vatika knifka. She is doing, she's acting throughout with absolute determination. There is no fear here. The only big question is, why doesn't she talk to Yitzchak? That was the question that was bothering the Netziv. She's a tough, I'm saying she's tough, she's strong, she's determined. So what's the problem? Go in and talk to Yitzchak. I'll tell you why. And I'm convinced now more than ever, I think I said this about 20 years ago to Hanan Porat, Olav HaShalom. Rivka has one problem. It's not a psychological problem, nothing of the sort. Her relationship with Yitzchak is as good as the relationship of Sarah with Avram and Rachel with Yaakov. But one word. At the beginning of the parasha, it said she's having difficulty in pregnancy, and she goes to ask of God. And the pasuk said, "Vayomer Hashem lo." God said to her, "Don't forget the word lo." This is a communication from God to her. From this, she understands that she is going to have to walk around with a secret that's known to her that she cannot share with her husband. She never tells him that God told me that there are two nations growing in my womb. She never told him. Why was this told to her only, Vayomer Hashem la? You know why? Because by Yitzchak not knowing this prophecy that Rivka does know, Yaakov's life is saved at least twice and maybe more. It's terribly important that Yitzchak love Esav, because Yitzchak's love of Esav is going to mitigate the hatred of Esav to Yaakov. We'll show you the psukim right away. After it's all over with the brachas, it says that Esav hated Yaakov because he had stolen, in quotation marks, stolen the blessings from him. And he said, these are the words in the pasuk, Yikrivu yimei evel avi. when the time of mourning for my father will come, I will kill my brother. Esav is incapable of killing Yaakov as long as Yitzhak is alive. Understand? At the moment of his greatest anger and his greatest hurt, the intensity of his hatred for Yaakov, he stays his hand. Who stays his hand? You know who stops him? The fact that he has a relationship with his father Yitzhak. He can't do that as long as Yitzhak is alive. He has to delay. And you know what happens with delay? It will never happen. Because the next time he's going to meet up with Yaakov, Yaakov is going to come with an army. He'll never be able to touch a hair on Yaakov's head. Second, in next week's Seder it says, Vayetze, Yaakov leaves, he flees, he goes to Paddan Aram. He comes there, he comes to a field and he sees they're beginning gathering in the sheep in order to water them. And he asks the, what's going on over here? He asks the shepherds, the day is still middle of the day. Why are you watering, are you gathering your sheep to water them? They said, listen, there's a big boulder on the well, and we all have to remove it together. And then, of course, Yaakov just walks over and removes the boulder all by himself. And then he asks, do you know about the family of Bethuel and Lavan? Yeah, and they say, yeah, Rachel is coming. And it says, when he saw her, he cried. So I have it over here, you know, on the very back page, the back. Back page, number 9, the last source. Vayefk. And he cried. So the first pshat Rashi says is because he saw through Ruach HaKodesh that she's not going to be buried with him. Rachel is going to be buried at Kever Rachel. She's not going to be buried in the Maarat HaMachpelah. Dover Acher, a second pshat. See where it's on the line. Alternatively, you know why he cries? Because he comes to Paddan Aram, to the house of Rachel, with empty hands. Watch this magnificent Rashi. I know every Rashi is magnificent, but right now I'm looking at this magnificent Rashi. Rashi says he came with empty hands. Omar, he said to himself, Eliezer Eved Avi Abba, Eliezer, who was the servant of my Zayde, Avi Abba, Hoyu Biyod of Nizomim Utsmidim Umigdonos, he came with his hands full of nose rings and bracelets and delicacies when he went to find a wife for Yitzchak. Vani Ein Biyodi Klum, I'm coming here and there's nothing in my hand. Why did he have nothing? Lufi Sherodaf Elifaz ben Esav b'mitzvas Aviv Acharav. Listen to this Rashi. This is such a great Rashi. Elifaz, the son of Esav, pursued Yaakov. When Yaakov left Beersheva on his way to Haran, he had somebody pursuing him. Elifaz, the son of Esav, and he pursues him because of the command of his father. Esav told Eliphaz, kill Dod Yaakov, kill him. So Eliphaz pursues him, yeah, b'mitzas aviv acharav l'hargo, to kill him, v'hisigo. By the way, this is fascinating, that he caught up with Yaakov. Rashi earlier had said at the beginning of next week's Sedra that Yaakov in his journey had what Chazal called kvitzus aderech. The way simply, miraculously, it went quicker. And he was able to, you know, just go much, much quicker than the speed of light, taller than the highest building. Okay? And you know what's fascinating? This Eliphaz, who does not have God on his side, but you know what he has on his side? Hatred. And he also has the mitzvah of his father, kill Dod Yaakov. And he catches up with him. Watch what ensues. Watch what happens. Ulfisha Godal Eliphaz Becheko Shel Yitzchak. At the moment that he has to strike down Uncle Yaakov, since Eliphaz also was raised by Yitzchak, he couldn't do it. The second time that Yitzchak's love for Esav saves Yaakov's life. Lefisha Godal, because he grew up in the close embrace of Yitzchak. Moshach Yado, he withdrew his hand from murdering his uncle. Amalo. So Eliphaz says to Uncle Yaakov, it's pitiful. What will I do with my father's command? Like Esav, Esav was the one who had the mitzvah of kibud av, achen vei such kibud av. So Eliphaz also, what am I going to do? My father commanded me. I have a mitzvah. I have a mitzvah to kill you. What should I do? Most probably he went to the mikveh, he put on his gartel, and he said, hini nimuchon mezuman, to kill Yaakov. And he's about to do it, he can't do it. So you understand, he turns to the intended victim and he says, Uncle Yaakov, what am I going to do? But the mitzvah of my father gave me a mitzvah to kill you, to wipe you out. Yaakov is brilliant. Amalo Yaakov. Now you know what Yaakov could have told him? He could have told him, most probably that's what we would have said, or me anyway. You're crazy. You're out of your mind. You think killing a human being is a mitzvah. Are you? Where did you grow up? You're nuts. You're out of your cotton picking mind. Crazy? That's not what Yaakov says. Yaakov is the great psychologist. Esav, Eliphaz, I know your dilemma. I know your problem. You have a mitzvah. Your father commanded you to kill Uncle Yaakov, and you're not doing it, and it's very difficult for you. But you know, Chazal say, if somebody is poor, it's like he's dead. Take everything that I have, and it's as though you killed me, and I'm still alive. It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. Because you're going to tell a crazed Meshuggah who thinks that he has a mitzvah from his father to kill his uncle, and that's a real mitzvah that he has to fulfill. You can't talk sense to him and tell him, you're crazy. Meshuggah bista. That's not going to work. You know what's going to work? Giving him the idea, you know? You can kill me dead, and I'm still alive. Take all my money. So he came, Yaakov came to Paddan Aram, penniless. The reason why I am telling you this, Rashi, is simple. Because it means it's the second time now that Yitzchak's love of Esav has saved Yaakov. That's exactly, I believe, why when Hashem told Rivka that there are two mighty nations in your womb, Vayomer Hashem Lo, God said it to her. She has no right to share it with anybody else. And that's why when she sees that the blessings are going to be given to Esav, there's information she knows that Yitzchak doesn't know. And she can't tell him. What happens if you see somebody crossing the street who doesn't realize that a car is coming toward him? You just run in there and grab him out of the way. Push him to the floor, get him out of the way. That's the responsibility that Rivka has. She understands that Yitzchak is about to make a terrible mistake. She can't let him make the mistake. Is that immoral? Of course not. She is saving him from making a tragic mistake. And she understands very well that that's exactly the way it has to be. Yitzchak is the only one who will be able to tame Esav. And that's the only thing that's going to save Yaakov's life. So therefore, her sending Yaakov to get the blessings, she knows that the blessings belong to Yaakov, not Esav. By the way, I have a very strong feeling that she grew up in a society of Esavs. She understood them better. Who did Yitzchak grow up with? With Avram. Did Yitzchak see evil? He did, yeah. Did I shouldn't say? Yitzchak also, by the way, is quite tough. When Avimelech comes to see him, Yitzchak, whom everybody thinks is, you know, just a nice, good, holy man. No. Yitzchak is also tough. When Avimelech comes to me, he says, Madua, that's this week's Sedra, Madua Botam Eli, why did you come to me? Vatem Sneitem Otu. You hate me. You threw me out. And now you're coming to make a treaty with me. All right. I think I may very well have nearly proven my point completely. Just we're going to take a look at another one or two things here on that page. Ah, yeah, number 6. There are 2 psukim in Torah. People don't notice it. These are the 2 psukim that precede the parasha of the brachas. Just thrown in there. Vayehi Esav ben Arboim Shona. Esav was 40 years old. Vayikach Isha, and he took a wife, Yehudit bat Be'edi Achiti, and Basmath bat Elon Achiti. Vatihyena Morat Ruach LiYitzchak uLiRivka, and they were. I don't know where they get their English translation, a provocation. Morat Ruach means it darkened the spirit. It's upsetting. That's classic English understatement. She's aggravated. They're both aggravated. What?
It's connected with Mar.
With Mar, with bitter. A bitter spirit, bitter. Why do these 2 psukim appear here? Like, you know why they appear here? This is the introduction to the parasha of the brachos. Right here you see already that this Esav is not the one who should get the brachos. Rivka knows that. And Rivka is in the dilemma that she can't tell Yitzchak the truth as she knows it divinely told her. Vayomer Hashem la. And therefore there is no choice but to do exactly what she does. And at the crucial moment, when it's nearly all over, Yitzchak is going to realize what's happening. And he says about the one who got the brachos for him, Gam Baruch Yihyeh, he should be blessed. When he realizes, and he does realize, that Yaakov just now pulled something on him. You know what he realizes? That this fellow Yaakov, who he thought all along was an Ish Tam, you know, a nice frummy, without, he's not tough. Oh, does he see what this Yaakov is? And to survive, Klal Yisrael is going to have to be tough also. They're going to have to be like Rivka's. The moment he sees that this Yaakov got what it takes, then he's able to give him the brachos, even though he has a doubt. Hakol kol Yaakov, the voice is the voice of Yaakov, but the hands are the hands of Esav. That's the winning combination. The voice has to be the voice of Yaakov, but Klal Yisrael has to know that if we have to, we can go out there and fight. We can act tough, we can be tough, and we are tough. One more source we'll take a look at. Go back. Number three, the bottom of the second page. Number three, this is the end of the Sedra. After the brachas are over, Vatomer Rivka El Yitzchak, the Rivka that the Netziv is saying can't speak openly to Yitzchak because she is so frightened of him. Wait a minute. Look what happens at the end of the Sedra. Vatomer Rivka El Yitzchak. Rivka said to Yitzchak, Katzti b'chayay mipnei benot chayt. My life is shortened by the daughters of chayt. God forbid if my son Yaakov is going to marry one of them. Im lokeach Yaakov isha mibenot chayt. If Yaakov is going to take a wife from the daughters of chayt, ka'ela mibenot ha'aretz, from the daughters that we have over here, lama lichayim, what do I have to live for? Is this a communication between Rivka and Yitzchak? Oh boy, she's communicating. Is she communicating her displeasure? That was for the Englishman over here. Her extreme displeasure with the idea that Yaakov may marry one of these, one of the local girls over here. Oh, she can communicate with Yitzchak when she wants to and when she has to. The only time she cannot communicate with Yitzchak is about one thing. That prophecy that was told her at the beginning of the Sedra, Vayomer Hashem Lo. That she can't tell him. And you know what? And Yitzchak immediately listens. Vayikra Yitzchak Yaakov. Yitzchak called Yaakov and he blessed him and he told him, "Oh, don't marry a local girl. Go to our family in Padan Aram." And then the very four lines from the bottom, "Vayishma Yaakov elovev velimo." Yaakov listened to his father and his mother, and he went to Padan Aram. Now watch. "Vayad Esav." Esav saw ki ra'ot benot kanan beine Yitzhak oviv, that his father doesn't like the daughters of Canaan. This is such a revealing pasuk. You know, suddenly dawned on him. Dawned on him. By the way, it doesn't say that his mother doesn't like it. It says his father Yitzhak. I don't think here, if you want to become a gracious psychologist, you can say that the Esav didn't have much of a relationship with his mother. No, he didn't. And you know why? Because he knows that she knows him. She can identify an evil person. She can smell them out. She lived amongst them. So you know what Esav does? Vayelech Esav el Yishmael. He went to Yishmael and he took Machlas Bas Yishmael ben Avraham. A host in the voice. He married another woman. So there are two things over here. Number one, what's important? You know what the pasuk is telling us at the end over here? Esav is humbled. He's learned a lesson. He knows he's the odd man out in the family, and he knows exactly why. He is really admitting at this point that he despised the birthright. He gave it away. And not for a pot of lentils. He gave it away after he ate the pot of lentils. He also didn't deserve the brachos. And in this symbolic way, he wants to show that he's part of the family, and he goes and marries the daughter of Yishmael. But Rashi is quick to point out, he didn't divorce the two Shaina Melech that he married before the brachos. Sum total of the parasha is the following. Neither Rivka nor Yitzchak acted immorally. They did what had to be done under the circumstances as they were. And we, in the longer view of history, she was absolutely right. The brachas didn't belong to Esav. Esav was not the one for the brachas. Esav had rejected the birthright. Rivka's relationship with Yitzchak was a beautiful, perfect relationship, just like Sarah with Avraham and Rachel with Yaakov. Same relationship. There was only one thing that she could not tell Yitzchak. But if she wants to tell Yitzchak, I can't stand the daughters of Chait, don't let Yaakov marry one of them, she says it. She's able, she has determination, she has strength, and there's a beautiful relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka. That's it.